Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, August 18th. I'm Ray Graff. Once again, joining us to answer your automotive questions is our pal Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. So now's the time to call with your car question, 800-348-2551. Maybe your struts are listless and sagging. Perhaps your Wankel rotary engine needs some adjustment. Well, this is the place to call, 800-348-2551. Always a popular show, so good to get your calls in early. Gordon Fricke is here. Your calls, your email. You can also email, by the way, voxpop@wamc.org. And there are other ways. I'll tell you about those when we start the show, which we shall do after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair once a month, and Gordon Fricke is the guy to do it. He is here today. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for over 30 years. He owns and operates Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. And man, does this guy know cars. So if you have a question, now's the time to call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Mr. Fricke, welcome back.
Thanks, Ray. Good to be back.
So, hot weather. It's been a very hot stretch we've had.
It has, yeah. And you take for granted your air conditioner. When I came in today, I stayed in the car for an extra minute or two getting some info to my youngest daughter. And I stepped out of the car and I said, wow, I didn't realize how hot it was again.
Yeah. Oh,
we're getting
yeah.
accustomed to it.
And is that hellish on cars?
It is difficult on cars. And sustained heat, just like sustained cold, brings out problems. So, yeah, there's a lot of heat-related issues.
So here's a question that came in before we get to the phones. And, again, the number is 800-348-2551. This one came in via email from Mark, who says, please explain the difference between getting a rebuilt transmission versus obtaining a new one. Are rebuilt ones just as good, or should one bypass that and just get a new one? Mark has a 2005 Honda Accord with a V6 engine at approximately 150,000 miles.
Yeah, it's a very good question. And it gets a little bit confusing when talk of a rebuilt, remanufactured, or new component comes around.
Yeah.
In terms of this transmission, I think he's almost 100% talking about a rebuilt unit. To get a brand new unit, let's say from Honda, would be very, very costly.
Yeah.
And you can buy remanufactured units through the car makers. You know, Honda has a program in their parts departments, Ford, Chevy. They all do for the most part. So brand new, I think, probably would exist, but I think he's talking about a remanufactured. And that is the way to go.
But the labor alone is pretty pricey when you put a new transmission in,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. Many years ago, changing a transmission at that time would be a conventional rear-wheel drive front engine car,
yeah,
like your Le Mans maybe, you know, that very conventional setup.
Yep.
Wasn't that big of a deal. Now they're packed in. There's all-wheel drive in a lot of cases. It's a front-wheel drive, all-wheel drive. The engine is transverse. There's a subframe in the way, a steering rack. The labor is just insane now on some of these jobs.
So if you have a car that is, let's see, his car is a 2005, fairly new, but 150,000 miles, is that almost to the point where you say, well, maybe get a new car?
Well, that's the thing. It depends how good the rest of the car is.
Yep.
How much he loves having this particular car, and if the cost to replace the transmission is, let's just throw out a number at, say, I don't know, $3,500.
Yeah.
What is his car worth without the transmission, and what can he replace the car for? So sometimes it makes sense, even though it sounds like a big number.
Right. Okay. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and let's get right to the phone lines. And Philip and Rensselaer. Philip, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
And just for clarification, I'm from Remsen, not Rensselaer.
Oh, Remsen. Okay. Yes. Of course. They're not very close to each other. Okay. You're on.
All right, so I'm having some trouble with my 2004 Chrysler PT Cruiser, and I've been having brake issues on it for about the past 3 months. Back in May, I took it in and had the brakes done. I was hearing a creak when I was coming to a stop and everything. Got the brakes done, and the creak went away for about a month. Afterwards, sorry, I'm trying to get my facts straight here. I go back the next month, and I'm having the same issue. The creak comes back, and I get new pads and rotors put on, and it goes away for about maybe a couple days, and then it comes back. Just yesterday, after having some work done for another problem that I was having with my car, I'm still hearing the same creak, and they put new pads and rotors on, and I've still got the same issue, and I had that on later on during the day. So my mechanic was thinking that the issue itself could possibly be maybe the brand of the rotors themselves. Could that be a possibility of why I'm hearing the creak?
So just to get the terminology correct, the noise you're hearing, you're hearing it while braking?
Yes, I'm hearing it when I'm coming to stop at, like, say, a stop sign.
Yep, so the very end of the stop, you hear something?
You say a creak or a screech?
It's a creak. It sounds like if you're going up old steps.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it may not have anything to do with the brakes.
Like a ball joint or something?
It could be something like that. It could be a suspension component, a control arm bushing. There's a lot of things moving around in the front of the car that are affected by accelerating, braking, steering, leaning through curves. I would say after the third set of pads and rotors, that's not probably it. So I think the suspension system should be looked into. And if you've got a lot of miles on the car, you know, it could be a number of things. But I would, first of all, make sure it's safe, which I'm sure your mechanic has done. And then start being suspicious of other things. Like Ray said, ball joint, possibly. But that's I think that's where you need to go. It's probably not a brake-related problem by the sound of it.
Well, if you put three new ones on, yeah, chances are it's not that.
Yeah, or something else.
Okay, man. Good luck, Philip.
All right, then. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551, or the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And Gunner wrote us about his 1999 Volvo XC70. Says it has 182,000 miles on it. Yesterday on the thruway, a flashing orange light came on, and upon searching on Google, found it is a transmission failure light. Before bringing it to mechanic, should I suspect anything simple that I can do myself? I was told about shifting from park to drive a few times to clear a switch. I tried it to no effect, hoping I don't need a whole new transmission. That's from Gunner.
Yeah. Well, what he has is the transmission's version of the check engine light.
Yeah.
It is a onboard diagnostic feature, and if something is affecting the transmission's operation, it'll flash that light. And it could be something extremely easy and minor that isn't costly. It could be trouble occurring in the transmission. It really needs to be scanned to find out what it is. So I think what I would do is get it checked.
Scan the code?
Yeah, see what the code is, and then take it from there.
Okay.
You know, there is kind of a hillbilly way of clearing trouble codes,
yes,
and it doesn't work on all
modules. Speeding up and slowing down?
Yeah,
and
No, but it doesn't affect all the modules, but, for example, the engine control module and some of the transmission codes, disconnect the battery, leave it disconnected for a minute or two or three, however long, but it needs to be unhooked for a couple of minutes, reconnect it, and that will clear a lot of the memories out, start all the modules out from at scratch, and they'll start doing their testing. And if you get a new code or a new light, the problem reoccurred, needs to get checked.
Now, a Volvo with 182,000 miles, they go for 6-7 million miles, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a friend that has a XC70, and he travels a lot, does a lot of business travel. And we just had the car in, and I think it had 235 or 236,000. Looks great, drives great. He doesn't have any intention of getting rid of it.
Well, let's go back to the phones. And Mary Jo in Mount Tremper. Mary Jo, you're on.
Hi. I'm actually driving in my car right now. I'm 28. I've had a problem since the end of last year with my air conditioning. I didn't bother with it because the season was over. It's continued to be a problem. It goes on and off intermittently with no logic to it. My wonderful mechanic, Walt, on Route 28, scraped off rust and everything and said all the waters, fluids, and everything are there, are fine. And it's been doing it again, and I don't know what to do next.
Yeah. We run into this periodically, and of course those intermittent problems are the absolute worst, because if you can't make it fail, everything will test out okay.
Yeah.
That's not what you want to hear. You know, you want to say, yeah, it needs XYZ switch.
Can I put you on the radio right now? Since
sure.
I'm
yeah, we'll hang Thank up, you. Mary Jo, and the answer is coming your way right
Thank
about
you.
Now.
Thank you so much.
You got
so-
it. All right. So.
Okay, so we've had this question before, and on some cars I have found in hot weather, the compressor clutch, if it's getting weak, will disengage without any notice.
Oh, yeah, we talked about this
yeah.
last time.
And you will go from perfectly normal air conditioning to as if somebody turned it off.
Yeah.
15 minutes later, 10 minutes later, the compressor has cooled just enough for the clutch to reactivate, turns the compressor on, bang, you've got nice cold air again.
Hmm.
So that is definitely a possibility.
So that's something that... In this day and age, you can't just replace the clutch anymore?
Well, we talked about that also. And yes, some cars you can replace the clutch assembly. And if the compressor is accessible, that does make sense. Some compressors are in a horrible location.
Yeah.
And you have to remove them to get to the clutch. At that point, you got a lot of miles on the car, and the cost difference is not much. You're better off getting the whole unit. And that's a judgment call by the mechanic and the owner of the car when they reach that point.
So in Mary Jo's case, it might not just be a faulty sensor.
No, it could be, yes.
Or a thermostat.
It is. Well, not a thermostat, but there are switches on the air conditioning system that tell it whether the pressure is too high, too low, not to come on, when to come on. And those switches can get tired and can just fail completely out of the blue. But you got to catch them. Failed. That's the killer
yeah.
here.
So the next time it fails, Mary Jo should go right to the mechanic.
And you know what'll happen? It'll work
fine.
It'll
be fine.
It'll yeah. work perfectly fine.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Support comes from NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. Capital Roots, working to help people in the Capital Region access healthy, affordable, and local food. Grow, educate, provide. CapitalRoots.org for information on how to support. Curran Compliance Services Incorporated, Greenwich, New York, and St. Paul, Minnesota. National compliance and regulatory consultants for life insurance carriers and their distribution partners. CurranCompliance.com. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. And the Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, an undergraduate theater program in liberal arts with concentrations in design and technology, theater studies, and performance. newpaltz.edu/theatre.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's our automotive maintenance and repair program for the month of August. Gordon Fricke is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. And back to the phones we go. Let's go to Brad in Chicopee. Brad, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Thanks a lot. So I got a 2002 Mercury Mountaineer. And when I make a reasonably sharp turn... doesn't have to be all the way over, but, you know, mostly. Then the front end seems to jump and hop, and even on dry pavement, you may even hear a tire squawk. And my sister had a similar year Explorer, which you probably know is the same vehicle, and she said hers kind of did the same thing. It's got a couple hundred thousand miles on it, but other than that, it's fine. So I just wondered if there was the CV joint or something like that. To be looked at or what?
Yeah, that's That's a kind of a common occurrence on. Now your Mountaineer is all wheel drive, correct? You don't shift it.
Yeah,
in
there's no selector, yeah, right? It's always on.
Yeah, no buttons to push or anything. It's just always there.
Is that,
yeah. So those systems are trying to deliver power to all the wheels, so you don't have to do any changing inside the vehicle. So what happens is you've got a differential in the back, you got a differential in the front, and then you've got a transfer case delivering power to all of the wheels. What you might have is you could have a sticky clutch set in the rear diff. A lot of times on those vehicles, it gives you a chatter. But you also can feel a resistance when you're turning sharp. It's very hard to get around that corner. Any warning lights on in your?
I don't know.
Okay.
No. I do also have a high pitched whine that occurs with. You can hear it under 40. It changes pitch with speed little bit, which seems to be coming from the front end or the rear end, which I don't know if that's involved with the same, issue or not. But
does that whine disappear when you let off on the gas?
No, it kind of when you're accelerating or decelerating, when you're in a happy kind of coast spot in between, it's sort of mostly gone.
Yeah. I think that is what you're hearing there more than likely is a gear noise from the ring and pinion, and that could be the front or the rear differentials. I think given the age and mileage, if it's not causing you any great troubles, the least thing I would do would be to change the fluids in the differentials and the transmission fluid, I believe, may not have any effect on this, but your transfer case is a separate unit. I think it might be good just to have somebody check all those fluid levels and change them.
Okay.
It's going to be good maintenance. It may not help the problem, but if it's not giving a big trouble, I think I would try that first.
Just keep it going.
Yeah, but
okay.
Get those fluids changed.
Appreciate the help.
All right, Brad, we appreciate the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. And over to Joe and Troy. Joe, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Thanks for taking my call. I've got a 2012 Subaru Outback with about 60,000 miles on it. And over the last year or so, I've noticed as I hit bumps and all, the back end seems to want to walk around a little bit, if you know what I mean. I do the typical kind of what the test you would do, jump up and down in a bumper to see if the shock or strut system stabilizes after a bounce or two. And it seems to lock up fine there. But I was wondering, would it be the strut system on it, or is there something else that could be causing it to get more bouncy?
Yeah, and you're noticing that primarily in the back of the car?
Yeah, typically it's more in the back of the car where it seems to, chatter or be unstable.
If you take a flashlight and shine that light up and down those rear struts, see if there's any fluid leaking out at the bottom, of the shock absorber part. And if you're seeing oil or fluid running down either one of those rear struts, they are definitely failing. A dampness around the piston where it comes out is considered normal for a lot of cars, but when it comes out and runs down the body of the shock itself, they're on their way out, and that could be what you're having happen. The other thing is a rear misalignment can make the car unstable in the back. If the rear toe is really out of whack, when you go over a certain bump, the car's going to kind of move around because the wheels aren't pointing perfectly straight ahead anymore. And that would show up as poor tire wear, choppy tires, and really noisy tires when you're driving. But check the struts, see if they're leaking, and then look at your tires. See if they're worn nice and even, or if they're really choppy and bad. You may be needing an alignment and or struts or both.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Niskayuna and Jim in Niskayuna. You're on.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for taking my call.
Hello.
I have a new this year, a 2016 Toyota 4Runner. And when I really accelerate, step on the throttle, the first time I drive it in the day, I get a burning smell. And it's only got about 4,500 miles on it. I've had other new cars and never had a similar smell, and I'm just wondering what the possibilities are.
Now, this is basically the tailpipe. You're smelling an exhaust odor?
Kind of, but, you know, not just like, it doesn't smell like just straight exhaust. And it doesn't happen later on.
So only when it's,
you know, later on in the day.
So it's after a cold start.
Just that first run, and just when I really put it down. Mm. You know, when I'm driving, you know, say whatever 30 miles an hour is fine. But if I really put the gas pedal down, I get the same smell.
So it's a pretty new car, 4,500 miles.
Pretty new car, yeah. Yes.
Well, this is what I would do. Of course, you know, being in such a new car, you're fully under warranty. If you can reproduce that every time. You want to see if it's really out the tailpipe, if you're smelling emissions, or if they're in the unlikely case that something is leaking from the engine and it oozes out overnight and you start it up and it burns off the first, you know, five or 10 minutes, and then that tiny leak
that
is gone.
Sense.
I mean, it's not likely. You know, Toyota does a great job of sealing their components. They don't generally leak, but it's entirely
Mistakes
possible.
Happen.
Absolutely. So now that since the car is that new, I just keep your eye on it, really track down when it happens, and then bring it to the dealer's attention when you're pretty sure the area that it's coming from.
Okay.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for the call. This came in via email from Bill, who asks a question. How long should rear brakes last? 2007 TSX had rotors and pads replaced at 51,000 miles. They had to be replaced again at 71,000 miles. I'm not hard on my car. Drive very evenly. Is this normal?
The first set lasted a good long time. 50-some thousand miles is quite good, particularly on rear brakes, because the rear disc brakes are prone to a lot of salt and water, and all the junk on the road covers the back brakes, you know, when you're going down the road. So that's good mileage. Now, the second set only lasted, what, 71,000?
20,000 miles, I guess, yeah.
So the material that was used on the brake job may not have been of the premium variety. Yeah. You don't necessarily have to go use factory brake pads and rotors, you know, from Toyota. But if a economy pad was used, that'll explain it. They just won't last as long. So I got a feeling it's a quality issue of the materials that got put on it at 50,000.
You know, I've found in my experience, and it's all anecdotal, that if you have to park your car outside all the time, you're going to go through rotors and everything else almost twice as fast.
They corrode overnight in the rain. Yeah, you'll see an orange film on those brake surfaces if it's damp out and it's rained overnight. And that gets cleaned off when you drive the car and use the brakes the first few times. But day after day after day, year after year, it beats the rotors up and they start to rust. So you're absolutely
indeed.
Right.
Let's go back to the phones and Vinny in Glens Falls. Vinny, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So I have a 2007 Hyundai Santa Fe. I own it outright. I bought it I'm the second owner. It has 133,000 miles plus, and I'm looking into getting a Nissan Murano. I've never owned one. I've never had a new car, but I really, really want one. I just read a lot on them, and apparently the CVT transmissions had a lot of issues in the past, and I heard that it really hasn't been redesigned, except it's had some upgraded, durability in the new parts of the transmission. But I just wanted to know what your ideas are about the CVT transmissions and if you have any information on the Murano itself.
Yeah. Well, the CVT, which is it's called a constant variable transmission, doesn't shift like you normally expect a transmission to shift. You don't feel that one, two, three, four, you know, bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
It's just like you step on the gas and the vehicle accelerates and the engine speed is similar, it stays the same and the car goes.
Yeah.
It's a relatively new concept. It's been out since the probably late 90s, maybe 2000s. Started out disastrous. All the car makers canned it because of durability issues. They went back to the drawing board, redesigned them, made them more durable. They're in a lot of cars now.
Why? The other way works just fine.
Yes. Well, they're...
That's from what I heard, and it's also very smooth. It's significantly smoother. You step on it, and it just everything just feels and sounds so much smoother.
Yeah. There is no shifting. There's no lunging or, you know, you don't feel the car jerk between gears. It's a little more efficient because it keeps the engine at its sweet spot of RPM range, so you can keep the power at a nice level. And I think it's probably, on a manufacturer standpoint, during mass production, it's probably less money in the end because there's maybe less things going on in
there.
That
makes sense.
But yes, Nissan had trouble, as did a lot of car makers, and they also raised the warranty on the previous models, and they've made the new ones more robust. As to a brand new Murano, what the lifespan will be, I don't know, but they definitely have gotten on to the problem. So I don't think I'd be fearful of it.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Vinny. We appreciate the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, and the number is 800-348-2551. I'm Ray Graff. Gordon Fricke is our guest on this automotive maintenance and repair program. And Diane in Orange. Diane, you're on.
Ray, I love it when you host the round table.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. I didn't
know
anyone listened.
I do when you're on. I have a dilemma for Gordon. I'd like his opinion on... I have a 2010 Subaru Forester with 25,000 miles on it. And at this age, I was wondering if it would be more feasible to trade it in for a brand new one because I anticipate a lot of problems because of the age of it.
So it's a 10 car with 25,000 miles?
Right.
Yeah, that's beautifully low mileage.
Yeah, it
you know
sure
how many
is.
People would like to get that car.
I'm just worried about everything starting to rust and break down, and I'd rather have a new vehicle without the problems.
Yeah, I personally would not be worried about that car at this stage. If you got to be 8, 9, 10 years old, and now there's only 50,000 miles on it, you may start to run into some issues that have to do with sitting around, not being driven a lot, corrosion and rust. I would say, I would not be concerned about getting rid of the car before trouble starts. If you
really
like to have a new car every 5 years, 6 years, and you're accustomed to that, by all means. I mean, that's a very desirable trade-in.
Absolutely.
But I wouldn't be worried about the car. Not at all.
Well, thank you. You guys are the best.
Well, thank you very much, and good luck with that. That's a pretty low-mile car right
I'd like
there.
To get it.
Yeah, 25K.
Maybe
yeah.
She'll sell it.
Well, let's go back to the line here, and let's see who's been waiting longest. We have a fully loaded bank of calls here. Let's go to Shelley in Cheshire. Shelley, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I bought a 2003 Buick Century that had about 58,000 miles when I bought it about a year and 4 months ago. And I just used it on the Taconic from New York City up to the Berkshires. And then when I was in the Berkshires, just using it around town. But just about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I have a check engine oil. The car only has 63,500 miles on it. And I bring it to a mechanic, and he put in transmission fluid, and he changed the solenoid and a few wires that needed to be put together. But the engine oil light is still on. And I'm just wondering what you think I might do. I don't really want to put an enormous amount of money into the car since it's a 13-year-old vehicle.
Sure. Yeah, that's an extremely common light to have on nowadays. And the older a car gets, the more likely you are to see the check engine light. And it's a little deceiving. It really should say check emissions because a lot of people think the check engine light is on, I'm in trouble. I'm out of oil. I'm overheating.
Yeah.
I've got big problems, when it really is driven by the potential for the car to be polluting, and that's why the light comes
mm-hmm.
on. So it could be one of maybe 90 or 100 different things. So it needs to get scanned at your shop with a scan tool.
Now, does the 03 Century allow you to go in, hit a couple of buttons, and look at the code yourself?
I don't think so. I think that was...
Yes, I was able to do it with a friend who had the coder, and my mechanic, and it showed the same thing. It said air intake.
Wow, there you go.
On the coder, P0113, something like that, yeah. For the Buick Century. Yeah. And we were able to turn it off, and one time I went to the post office 2 miles away, and the light went off, and I was thrilled.
Yeah.
And, when I went back, after I got my mail, it turned it back on again, and yeah. The light was back on.
Yeah, no, that's not curtains for the car, but it needs to be tested, and I believe that's a lean code, that P003, did you say it was?
I think it's 0113.
113, yeah. I would get that looked into because it could be a vacuum leak on the engine somewhere. Could be a gasket, an intake gasket. But that would be worth getting checked. This car seems pretty valuable to you in the sense that it's, you know, long paid for and it's a reliable car. I always recommend
it skips a beat. You know, when you're at a certain miles, like 35 miles an hour, it's not smoothly transitional. Mm-hmm. It will. If I'm in cruise control at 65 miles an hour, it's perfectly smooth. I don't feel anything. But when I'm going just on a local road and I'm going 35 miles an hour, sometimes it skips a beat.
Yeah. Huh. That would be a different code. That would be an engine misfire. But I think I would get it scanned. Get that thing analyzed and see what it is, because it may not be that big of a deal. And the car sounds like it's still good, so I would check it.
Okay, then. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Shelley. Now, with that code, the P0113, is that an inspection killer in New York State?
Yeah, well, any check engine light is an inspection killer for whatever reason. So if the check engine light is lit, you won't pass the state inspection.
That stinks.
And you can't just turn it off and then bring it in, because the computer will not have run its tests, and the state system will recognize that, and it'll still fail.
So, but that one could be also robbing some performance, though, right? The air intake?
It's very possible, yes. It may not be enough for her to quite notice it, although she did comment that it didn't feel like it was perfectly smooth at certain times, and that could be that lean situation causing the engine to kind of chuggle a little bit.
But so you think it's related? In other words,
I think it is. Yeah, okay. I think the light, her code is probably related to her feeling that it's not running quite right.
So it needs a little more air.
It may need a little extra fuel. That may be a lean code. I'm not sure on that car.
I see what you're
saying. Yeah.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We'll be back with the home stretch coming up.
Support comes from the Discovery Center, presenting Karner Station, an exhibit exploring the world of the endangered Karner blue butterfly, showing how it was discovered and how to protect it. AlbanyPineBush.org. Ashokan Center, building community through shared experiences in nature, history, and the arts. The Ashokan Center in the Catskill Mountains, where nature inspires. AshokanCenter.org. Sheehy Opticians, Albany, New York. Providing eyeglasses, including Bevel, LaFont, and Pro Design, progressive lenses from Verilux and Nikon, and Maui Jim, Costa, and Ray-Ban sunglasses. SHEEHYopticians.com. Mango Tree Imports, a global fair trade shop in downtown Saratoga Springs, New York, featuring artisan goods from more than 60 countries. MangoTreeImports.com and on Facebook. And Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com.
Sounds like a Quinn Martin production here on the program. No, it's Vox Pop. It's public radio, don't you know?
Quinn Martin, is that Hawaii 5-0?
Yeah, Mannix and those.
Wow, that's
didn't
excellent.
That music sort of sound like
it did.
70s? Gordon Fricke is our guest. He is an automotive and apparently music expert. He's nice to have on the program once a month or so to answer your car and truck questions. And, oh, boy, some people have been waiting a long time. The lines have been loaded. Maria in Lakeville, thank you for your patience. You're on.
Yeah, I have a car that lives outside all year long. And as soon as the weather gets colder, I have critters that go up and live under the hood, and they've torn out a lot of the insulation and whatnot, and I'm afraid they're going to start working on the wires. Is there anything that I can safely put in there that won't get dragged and catch on fire when I'm driving that'll keep them? I don't think it's mice. I think it's something bigger like a red squirrel or chipmunks, because I see remnants of big acorns and whatnot. But is there anything I can do to put under there?
That is such a popular, or I shouldn't say popular, but a common occurrence in the country when the weather cools off.
Yeah.
Rodents, mice, squirrels, chipmunks, all that stuff. And yes, they will gnaw on wire insulation.
Yeah.
I don't know what they think it is. Maybe it's got a flavor.
They've torn off all the back insulation toward the firewall.
Yeah.
That is gone now.
Yes.
Good heavens.
And they're taking it, they're building a nest somewhere with it. And
we
found those nests in the heating systems, under the seats, in the trunks, in the spare tires, everywhere. And you can't keep them out, particularly under the hood. There's nothing to seal them out from under the hood.
Yeah.
I've had people try everything. Dryer sheets, bars of soap, various sprays from the hardware store, repellent.
I've tried peppermint oil, and then I don't know if I can say a brand name. There's something now called Mouse Magic that somebody said to try. Have you heard about that?
I haven't, but I would be all for trying everything, because I have a few cars that sit out in the country. They're in garages, but for some reason, some years, we get a lot of rodent activity. And I even have one car that I spoke to a guy that's a exterminator. I said, in one of my cars, it's in a garage where there's an electrical outlet. I put an extension cord in the car with one of those electronic mouse evaders, or whatever they call them.
Ultrasonic.
Yes. And I said, I think it may be working. He shook his head. He says, if you feel better using it, that's fine. But they don't do anything.
Gordon, so you and I have had this conversation before.
Yes, we have.
I think they work too, but I have no scientific basis to say that.
I put one in a car, and I haven't checked that car yet this summer. Shame on me, but I guess I should take the cover off it and see if they're in there.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I would talk to either an exterminator or try those other products. You've got nothing to lose.
Now, where should I put them? Because I think they're like little paper packets, and I don't want anything catching on fire. Where should I place them?
Well, look under the hood strategically and just put them in areas that can't drop on the engine.
Okay.
There's not too many areas that it really could catch on fire unless it's on the exhaust manifold. But look for some and put lots of them under there, overdo it and see what happens.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks a lot.
I mean, I would also suggest getting a cat and putting it in the car.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. And, it's companionship when you're driving a long drive. Let's go to Bill in Ashfield. Bill, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Yes, thank you. I have a question on the gas pumps. With the octane rating, it always says using the R plus M over 2 method for coming up with the octane number. What is R, what is M, and why divide by 2?
All right, I love this.
Well, there's a couple of different formulas, and I believe the Europeans use a different one than we do, because if you flip open the gas cap on a German car, you'll get a number that's higher than it converts to U.S., and it'll say, a lot of people think you need 93, but if you look down below, the U.S. Formula makes it 91.
Huh.
But the octane has to do with the gasoline's ability to resist combustion or firing. It doesn't want to fire too quickly. So the higher the octane, the more resistant the gasoline is to detonating or pre-igniting. So I'm not sure what those exact what that formula means, but if you open up your gas lid on your car, it will tell you the requirement by the manufacturer, and you use the one that matches the gas pump, and that's all you really need to do. You don't have to go over that, and if you have to, you can go under it, but you should stick to what the car maker requires or recommends.
You're right. I was just interested in what the formula
I
bet a Google would help you there.
If the lines weren't so full, I bet somebody would call that in here, but
I don't think we have time.
No, we don't either.
That's a great question, though, Bill. Maybe next time we'll have that answer for you. Thank you for the call. Over to Mike in Green Island. Mike. Oh, you got to turn. Hey, Mike, could you turn your radio down? Oh, boy. Oh, he waited all that time. Mike, are you still there? Oh, for Pete's sake. Mike, I'm so sorry. He waited 20-plus minutes.
Oh, boy.
I feel terrible. But, you know, he's not responding. Let's go to Andrew in Great Barrington. Andrew.
Yes, I have a 2002 Camry, and the engine light came on. So I had it put on the computer, and they said it was a catalytic converter. So I had it checked two or three times by two or three different garages, and they all came up with a catalytic converter. So I had it changed, and it cost me $700. And a day later, the light came back on, and I went and had it put on the computer again. And the computer this time said it was it bank one, row two, or something like that? The other, it's like a sensor down the line from the first sensor in the catalytic converter, the second sensor down the line.
Yes.
So they said that would cost about $100 to replace.
Yeah, so the catalytic converter has a oxygen sensor or an air-fuel ratio sensor in front of it, measuring.
Yeah, I replaced that one, too.
Yep, what's measuring what's coming out of the engine, and then there's the, they call it the catalyst monitor, or O2 sensor 2, that checks on the condition of the exhaust after the catalytic converter to make sure it's doing its job.
Right.
If you have a PO420 code, which is what you had, indicating your catalytic converter is not efficient anymore, it's highly recommended to change the sensor after it. So the computer and everything is right up to speed with the right, with good equipment. So if your second, okay. If your O2 sensor number 2 didn't get changed along with the converter,
it didn't.
It should be changed now. And then you'll get an accurate reading of if the converter is doing its job.
Yeah.
So
do you think do you think I needed a converter in the catalytic converter to begin with?
Well, that's really subject to the tech testing it, watching the readings on the scan tool to see if the converter is in fact doing a poor job with the emissions.
Yeah.
I can't answer that question. How many miles were on the car or on it now?
160,000.
Yeah, I would have very little doubt that that converter was tired out. That's a lot of miles for it to keep working.
Yeah.
So I don't think you replaced it unnecessarily. I think you do need to get that second sensor changed, and I think that'll take care of it.
Andrew, thanks a lot for the call. This came in via email from Brian. I'm in the market for a used Subaru, but I'm concerned because so many had issues with the head gaskets leaking. Oh, don't say those words. Do you know what year that Subaru corrected this issue with their motors? And that's from Brian.
That is a wonderful question because we work on a lot of Subarus.
Yep.
And we have experienced this cylinder head gasket issue that started in the 90s and didn't end until 2010.
Wow.
And the early ones had issues of coolant leaking.
Yeah.
Subaru corrected the coolant leak issue with improved head gaskets.
Right.
And then lo and behold, now they have an issue with oil leaking out of the head gaskets.
Brutal.
So it's almost as bad. It drips out of the between the head and the cylinder, cylinder head and the engine. And it gets on the exhaust and on the catalytic converter and smells. So to answer the question, they eventually, in some models 2010, other models by 2011, did a total engine redesign. And the timing belt is gone, and the head gaskets, so far, from what I've gathered, that issue is also gone. But that problem lived for a super long time.
Okay, but it apparently is fixed now, at least so far as you've
seen. So far, so good.
All right, let's go to Anna in New Paltz. Anna, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hi. My daughter was given a 2000 Honda Accord, and she fixed a few things on it, got it running, and by all accounts, it had been working fine, but it sat for over a year. And so what happens now is when you drive it, it does this big clunk when it shifts from first to second gear.
Oh, boy.
So we're wondering, you know, is this obviously a transmission problem, or could this just be something related to the car sitting that long?
Do you know how many miles are on the car?
I think it's about 120,000. Yeah. Could be a little more, though. I'm not positive.
That vintage Honda did experience that banging, shifting situation. And there isn't an awful lot you can do other than make sure that the fluid is clean and at the correct level.
Can you live with it?
Yes, depending on if sometimes that it will do that for a year or years. Other times it will go bad fast. There's no guarantee how
what's
long
going bad, the transmission?
If what she's describing is what I think it could be, is yes, the transmission is having a shifting issue. And Honda transmissions of that era were a bit different from your normal automatic. And they even called them Honda-matics. But different,
what a clever name,
yeah,
eh?
Yeah, different things going on in there than your standard automatic transmission. And I would, you know, check, have the fluid level and condition checked, change it. You may find the fluid's low, and that's what's causing this whole issue.
Yeah.
But about the only thing you can do on that to start with is a fluid check. And there are shift solenoids, and if you get a Honda tech or a shop that knows Hondas, there are a few external things that do the shifting on those cars. So I think you should get it checked out, because if you leave it alone, it may disintegrate.
Mm-hmm.
So I would okay. look into it.
Okay. Now I know the fluid is not low, but just for, should we just have it like changed anyway to get fresh transmission fluid in there?
You can do that, but if the level is correct and the fluid doesn't look horrible, I doubt changing it's going to improve anything. I think I would get it checked just to get an opinion from somebody that knows Honda transmissions.
Right.
And you don't have to do anything, obviously, but that situation is not going to go away, I don't think.
Let's go over to Richard in Whitesboro. Richard, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Oh, thank you. I had a quick question here on dash light coming on. The dealer said there's no code thrown, and but I was wondering. I also have a foot brake doesn't really hold, and I was just wondering if hand brakes or foot brakes ever throw codes. They have no idea what's causing the light to go on.
Tell me again, Richard, what light you're seeing? Did you say check engine?
It's a couple of them, a VSC.
Oh, okay, yeah, vehicle stability
kind of thing.
And are you getting an ABS code also?
I believe
or,
so,
or
yeah.
light, I should say.
There you go.
But they said no code.
If the light came on, there should be a history code stored. And it depends on their level of scanner. What kind of car is it again?
It's an 03 Avalon.
Okay.
Only 70,000 miles.
Yeah. Stability control, traction control, and anti-lock braking all work together, and they're measuring wheel speeds. So you could have an ABS sensor problem, corrosion issue, tone ring that gives the signal. I would get it scanned with somebody who's got software for Toyotas, because there might be some...
Oh, this was a dealer.
It was the dealer, yeah.
Well, interesting.
If the light came on, it should have left a history code. Not 100% guarantee, but it usually does.
So and the parking brake issue, the weak parking brake, wouldn't be related to that?
I don't think so, no. No, that's a mechanical, total separate system.
Okay, Richard, thanks a lot for the call. Let's see here. Who else has been waiting? Everybody's been waiting a long time. John in Glens Falls, you only have about a minute or two here, John.
Yeah, hi. I've got a 2006 Dodge Ram 1500 with a 5.7 in it. 160,000 miles on it, and what I found when I first got it, a few weeks after I got it, when I took off from a dead stop with the wheels turned, say to make a turn, it kind of shuddered a bunch. It seemed like a drive shaft issue possibly, but as time went on, now if I have the vehicle pointing straight and I take off slowly from a dead stop, it's shuddering from the center area underneath the drivetrain, whether it's a torque converter or transmission or drive shaft or even the rear end maybe. I was just wondering if that's a common thing and where to even start diagnosing what could possibly be happening before it just completely fails somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one because issues that occur when the vehicle is being accelerated or in motion are hard to simulate. But somebody wants to get the truck up on the lift and check the drive shafts front and back, check the all the universal joints, make sure all the mounts are good, you know, that the let's say the transfer case or the rear transmission mount is not ripped or bad and it's jumping.
Right. Someone had told me that in the transmission, like, there's a possibility the filters might have bulged or that there was some other plate in there that had, like, four screws in it that typically they found loosen up on people. Did you ever hear anything like that?
Not specifically on that vehicle, but, I mean, you get into the, you know, the intricacies of certain vehicles. They have their quirks. I don't know on that vehicle, but certainly, and it is an automatic, right?
Yeah, it's a two-wheel drive automatic.
It's a two-wheel drive. Okay, well, that's a lot less drivetrain to be concerned with.
Right.
If anybody's concerned that it could be from the transmission, removing the transmission pan, looking in there and seeing if there's any debris in it tells a good story. If it's full, if it's full of a lot of junk and materials and you know, maybe some powdered, sparkly metallic, you know, you've got internal transmission issues coming
up. It does have some miles on it, so obviously, you know, it could amount to just, you know, the things that the end of the service life, whatever component it turns out to be. So,
yeah.
Well, John, we're about out of time here, buddy, and we appreciate the call. Gordon Fricke, well done. Wow.
Thank
busy
you. We
show,
a lot
huh?
of stuff today.
Yeah. Maybe we ought to do this every day.
Yeah, it's better than sitting around, right?
Well, I guess so. I mean, you have work to do. You're here and you're not making money.
I got to go right back.
We don't pay you. This is the amazing thing about this program. People like Gordon do this as a community service, and we'll see you next month, Gordon. Support comes from Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston, rhinebeckart.com. HMT at the Spa Little Theater, beginning their 32nd season with Shrek the Musical, weekends October 15th through 30th at the Spa Little Theater, Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, hosting an open house for families and students, pre-K through grade 12, Thursday, August 18th, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. at 62 York Avenue, waldorfsaratoga.org for information. And Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony, presenting Musical Sunday Brunch with a new musical menu every Sunday. Details at realseafoodco.com. Thanks again to the great Gordon Fricke for being here. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Deb Malik. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely rest of your day. Tomorrow, the week has flown by, and it's a Food Friday at 2 o'clock.